So this is part 31 of our 49-50 part series on Talmud Torah. I'm trying to summarize this golden era of the Rishonim by highlighting the top four or five, which is impossible, but on anyone's list is the Rambam. We spoke about Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam. On anyone's list, the Rambam, 12th century, 1135, so just to cast it, frame it a little bit after Rabbeinu Tam, so I tried to keep the chronology. Obviously, in a very, very different world, as in the Sephardic world, it's a word that is a bit of anachronistic. The Sephardic world becomes a Sephardic world only in the 15th century when Spanish Jews migrate, but the world that we now take as the Sephardic world. Oh, my goodness, how to talk about the Rambam. Let me perhaps attack it from more of a personal perspective. Who the Rambam was, and what was his impact, you don't need me to describe it to you. There are books and books and libraries and libraries, and Talmid Chacham have written about it. So I'll just give you the details. If you're not familiar with it, I don't know who's listening, but more of how I think he impacted the Torah world, what was different about him. 12th century, starts in Spain, has to run from Morocco to Israel for dubious reasons. We're not sure why. Moves from Israel to Egypt, even though there's Isser to live in Egypt, spends the rest of his life in Egypt. According to many, he was very regretful that he had to violate the Isser of living in Egypt. Isser and Isser, it's a whole different story. Prodigious. There's not one area that he doesn't make his mark in historiographically. What he writes in the Gemara, he writes Sefer HaMitzvos, listing the mitzvos. He writes the philosophy, Mar Nevuchim. He condenses philosophy, Gemara Yikarim. He writes on Tanakh, he's a doctor, he's a sweeping, large, broad intellectual. Obviously, during his era, there's tremendous enthusiasm to come learn from it, just as there's very virulent opposition, especially some of the Spanish and French theaters. I'm not going to discuss that because these are just topics onto themselves. What does he stand for? How does he change? So first of all, he remapped the Torah. If you had spoken to someone before the Rambam wrote his Yad Chazaka, his 14-sectioned, standalone reconfiguration of Shas in easy language to read and in order as opposed to the meandering stream of consciousness of Shas, had you asked someone how many sections of Torah there, they'd say five. That's obviously just a very literary division. But topically, how could you divide Torah into topics? They'd say 60, because there's 60 Masechtos, but we all know that that's not neat, because Masechtos are, as I said before, they're meandering, discursive, digressional. Like you could be learning Nida, and all of a sudden you're talking about Shechita, and you could be learning Kiddush, and you're talking about Yir. It's all just a hodgepodge, because that's how they learned. Again, they knew Torah so well, they didn't have to organize it in topics. It's second nature, it's more conversationalist. Now, the Rambam remapped Torah into 14 sections, the 14 areas of Yad Chazaka. In order to rezone, you have to know the entire area. Let's say you want to rezone an area in the United States for voting. You have to get up in a helicopter and just take a bird's eye view, panoramic view of the entire area. Okay, we'll zone it this way. We'll draw a line here. It's absolutely stunning to consider how the Rambam learned Torah, New Torah, because you have to see the entire system. Now, I can describe it to you better than most because I actually saw it in real life. And I'm not comparing Rivara and Lichtenstein to the Rambam, obviously, but that was the experience of learning Torah and Rivara and Shir. Let me put it to you this way, it's not enough time, but when I learn, me, Moshe Tarragon, I don't read Achronim, I try to replicate the Achronim. Namely, I read Rishonim, and I try to build models based on the Rishonim. Some people read Achronim, they'll read the Stipel, they'll read the Kilos Yaakov, they'll read the Kovetz Shirim, they'll read Reb Chaim. Now again, I'll read them after I build my models, and their models obviously better than mine, but for whatever reason, I want it to be more personal. Yes or no, advantages, disadvantages. So many people today are reading Achronim. Some people like myself are mimicking, simulating the Achronim. I can't mimic or simulate Rishonim. Rishonim didn't have Rishonim. They had to read five or six sages and put together models of what the Talmudic concepts could be. I know people who know Torah better than me who can mimic Rishonim. They'll read five or six sages, they'll come up with ideas, and they'll see what the Rishonim said and maybe the Achronim. I've only met one person who mimics the Tanaim. The Tanaim didn't have Shas written down. They just knew Torah so well, they were just thinking of concepts. When Rav Aaron would give Shir, sometimes he wouldn't be responding to a sugya or to questions Rishonim raised in the sugya, or even to Gemaras and contradictory Gemaras like Rishonim did. He'd be talking about topics, Kedusha. What does Kedusha mean? He'd just pull ideas from from this Gemara, from this Pasuk, from this concept. He'd be talking about Avos and Tolados. I'm not going to get into it too much further because it will elongate this quick summary. The Rambam was that way. The Rambam was sitting on top. The only way I can describe it is, let's say you're building Lego and you just pour millions of pieces of Lego on the ground and you're sitting atop and you just see every piece of Lego and you decide how to build the structure or how to divide the Lego pieces by seeing the entire system. So that to me is the most massive. Again, I don't know the Rishonim, I wasn't in their minds, but their writing doesn't imply seeing the Torah world the same way the Rambam's writing implies seeing the entire Torah world from bird's eye view. Okay. Number two, of course, the Rambam was a great rationalist. And ironically, he was in the minority because most of his contemporaries were Mekubalim. And Kabbalah doesn't mean mysticism. It's a terrible, terrible translation. It means cosmology. And I'll talk about this in Mitzvah Shem next week. It doesn't mean you're levitating or gravitating or taking drugs or anything or in a semi-hallucinatory state. It just means you're considering worlds that are not part of our world, our universe. And therefore, we have no scientific empirical way to prove them. But you have to just accept them as being there. Him and Rav Sajagon were the two people who were the most rationalist approach in Judaism. And by the way, if you went back into the 12th century, most people are not purely rationalists. They have a healthy dose of Kabbalah in their lives. And somehow, at least particularly in the Ashkenazic world, and this is the theory of unintended consequences, the world becomes very rationalist. And I think part of it is Western European general trends starting in the 16th century in enlightenment, industrialization, and secularization. That's a slow process. There are surges of non-rationalist Judaism, but it becomes very rationalist, and I think the Rambam has a strong influence because the Rambam Sefer unintentionally becomes so popular in the Ashkenazi world, in some ways more than the Sephardic world, and the amount of sefarim that are written about the Rambam Sefer becomes so prodigious that the Rambam's voice and the voice of rationalism, the Rambam, of course, without getting into his positions about Shadim and spirits and Kabbalah, but it's only the accent was rational. So I think that if you wake up today, in most circles and in most yeshivos, the heavy rationalist strain is a product of the culture, but is very much influenced by the Rambam. It's unintended because he was writing, obviously he's writing for the entire Jewish population, but he's living in what we call the Sephardic world of Morocco and Algiers and Israel and Egypt and southern Spain. And all of a sudden, the Ashkenazi world, not just in this issue of rationalism, becomes so deeply influenced by the Rambam. It's fascinating how much its rationalist impact has. Let's see. Now getting a little more speculative. Sometimes in life, it's hard to combine intellect and piety. And we see people who we see are smart, and sometimes it's hard to hear them as being from. We have people who are very pious and devout, but sometimes their intellect doesn't come through, and whether it's there or not, we sometimes create that bifurcation. Sometimes we find people who are both, but they're different voices. There's a intellectual voice, and sometimes they speak in a different voice. Sometimes you meet these figures who the two voices merge. You feel they're deeply pious, and they're deeply intellectual, and their piety is expressed in a way that, I'm not saying this in a detrimental way, but sometimes the voice of piety is sappy and devoted and simplistic and very one-dimensional, which is amazing, and that's what piety is normally expressed as. But in the Rambam, you feel his piety. It's unmistakable. But even when he talks in those terms, and he talks in those terms at the end of Yad Chazakah, in those statements that are not just cold analysis of halachic and Talmudic terminology, but where he's describing his Avodas Hashem, he never breaks character, as we would say, in a Hollywood setting. He's always the same, even though the content is not cold analysis, but the content is how to be an Oved Hashem. It's fascinating to me, and again, I feel a lot of that when I met Rav Lichtenstein and I heard his voice, and he was the firmest person I ever met and I will ever meet, and yet the voice was always the same voice, just speaking about different aspects of our identity and our religious experience. Of course, the Rambam's broad, almost uncontained knowledge in almost every field that was important. Again, we're living in the 21st century at a time which is much less popular. But those who do style themselves that way and feel that it helps their religious identity certainly see the Rambam as a paradigm. Again, it was seamless in ways that I haven't thought about this officially, that someone like Rabbi Soloveitchik was. Rabbi Soloveitchik was holding two systems in each hand. There was a system of general views of religion and philosophy and the system of Jewish view of religion and philosophy, and juggling, contrasting, rubbing one up against the other, seeing how they would disagree. And the realm just feels seamless. It was all just one fabric, one tapestry, all the philosophical knowledge that he had studied, all the scientific knowledge, all the astronomical knowledge for Kiddush HaKodesh, all the medical knowledge, all the knowledge. I wouldn't even call it Torah Ma, it was just Torah, and Torah spreads across the entire world of Chachma. And that phrase, but it's a whole different conversation, that phrase can become very, very splintering. What I pick up from the Rambam is, what I pick up a lot from my Rebbe, is that when you know there were such smart people whose intellect was so vast and whose eyes saw so much and whose wisdom covered so much ground, you have confidence and you're not easily bullied by people of strong intellect who question religion. I can't describe it that well, but I was just discussing, Yuval Harari with someone in the Beis Medrash yesterday, this Israeli intellectual who's written books about transhumanism and the Homo sapiens, and very, very aggressively anti-religious and aggressively, and not intimidated by people like that, because I don't know that I could hold my own in an argument. I'm not as educated as they are, but I've seen people that are far, far more educated, far, far more wise than you. And I saw their piety also. And as it were, if it's all right for them, it's all right for me. And that's where faith becomes very sturdy. If it's all right for them, it's all right for me. And it provides a confidence. I think meeting people like that provides, you're not easily swayed, because you've seen people. You've seen people who are far smarter than yourself, far smarter than some of the intellectuals of our day. And you may not have the answers to all the questions, but faith doesn't mean having the answers to all the questions. Anyway, hard to contain the Rambam, just some thoughts and views about the Rambam on this 31st installment, 31st installment, excuse me.